three separately docketed cases, but they are consolidated for purposes of argument and ultimate disposition. Mr. Gilner, good morning to you.
Good morning.
May it please the court. My name is Will Gilner and I represent the appellant in this matter, Wallace and Cullen. The matter before the court this morning involves three consolidated appeals resulting in two contempt trials. On September 30, 2016, the trial court found the appellant in contempt of the decree of dissolution of marriage for failure to make property equalization payments. December 8, 2016, the court found the appellant in contempt for failure to pay child support. The appellant has five main arguments today. Number one, the court erred in finding the appellant in contempt with regards to the child support and property equalization payments. Number two, the court abused its discretion in setting the supersedious bond. Number three, the court wrongly denied appellant's motion to recuse. Number four, the court erred in denying appellant's motion for judgment on the modification. Finally, the court erred in awarding attorneys. The first argument is that the court erred in finding the appellant in contempt for violating the decree of dissolution of marriage on March 22, 2010.
Well, maybe to save a little time, isn't the argument on attorney fees dependent on the outcome of the contempt? So you don't need to talk about that because it rises or falls with your other arguments, right?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes.
In the present case, it was abuse of discretion for the trial court to find the appellant in willful violation of the decree of dissolution of marriage. Abuse of discretion occurs when the trial court bases its decision upon reasons that are untenable or unreasonable, or that its actions are clearly against justice, conscience, reason, and ethics. The main component of civil contempt is the element of willful disobedience. Willful disobedience means that the violation was committed intentionally and with knowledge that the act violated the court order.
You're not contending that there was not disobedience?
Contending that...
In other words, he didn't. Oh yeah, that's where the element of willfulness is what you're talking about. You're not talking about disobedience.
Correct.
All right, thank you.
And the basis for that argument, that position, that there was a modification on trial that had not been answered. Modification first raised regarding the issue of child support in 2012. On August 7, 2012, the appellant filed an amended answer and counter-complaint seeking a modification of child support. That was never answered.
So what did the appellant do to bring this 2012 motion for modification to resolution?
Well, there was quite a delay. In fact, it hasn't been heard or set for modification, for trial on the modification. He was pro se at the time. There was an interlocutory appeal filed that was dismissed based on the lack of a final appeal award. He retained counsel, who then retired from the practice of law unbeknownst to him. The initial underlying divorce action took about 2.5 years to get to trial. He did not know that this was unreasonable in the modification action.
But your proposition is that once he filed the modification, he, what, finished the sentence lease, doesn't have to pay child care, doesn't have to pay child support?
Well, the issue is whether those could be modified based on the findings of the modification hearing.
But that's the answer to a different question. Does the filing of the modification mean, from a legal standpoint, he doesn't pay?
Correct.
That's your view?
Yes.
And what's your best authority for that?
Well, the reason is that the modification could change the amounts due and owing.
Well, until it's changed, it's a judgment, isn't it?
That's correct. I think the recent court decision...
You're suggesting the mere filing of an application to modify somehow suspends the operation of a judgment.
Yes.
Do you have any authority for that proposition?
There's no case that is positive on that issue, but I think that the court's recent decision... State of Nebraska on behalf of Mariah B. and Renee B. versus Kyle B. not specifically address that issue, but I think it's important to note that this court indicated there was no modification on the file at the time of the contempt hearing.
In a somewhat recent case in Johnson, Didn't we handle this by looking, where there was a reduction, looking back and giving a credit?
In this case, credit might not be paid based on the results of the modification, including the breach of contract.
And then did we say in Johnson, if it doesn't equal out, then you can get a judgment?
Yes, but there's... Excuse me, there's little chance that judgment would be recovered.
But there's no dispute that your client didn't pay child support.
That's correct.
Okay.
Our next argument is that it was an abuse of discretion for the trial court to set the appellant's supersedious bond at an amount that exceeded 50% of the appellant's net worth. Nebraska revised
Does the record show that the bond was or was not set?
Yes, there was
or
a
paid,
bond set.
I beg your pardon.
Sir?
Was the bond achieved?
It was not.
Okay.
Nebraska Revised Statute Section 25-19-16 provides that the bond shall be the lesser of the amount of the judgment, decree, or final order, 50% of the appellant's net worth, or $50 million. The Nebraska Court of Appeals in Edwards versus Edwards ruled that the amount represented by 50% of the appellant's net worth is the maximum amount at which bond may be set. In this case, it's uncontroverted that the bond set exceeded 50% of the appellant's net worth. At trial, the appellant testified...
I'm sorry, it's uncontroverted, and so what was the evidence on net worth?
He testified that he had no assets following the sale of his business equipment.
Suppose the trial judge didn't believe that testimony. Are you, in essence, arguing the trial judge, for purposes of setting bond, has to accept that testimony as true?
There's no indication that he didn't.
Well, if 45, what were we to infer with the 45,000 that the trial court thought the net worth was 90,000?
No, I think that was based on the amount of child support that was owed.
And the trial judge related it to the order in the child issues, saying,
right,
I've come up with the 750. On the basis of the evidence related thereto.
Correct.
And so having made those findings in the supersedious issue, says, well, here's these findings I've made about ability to pay.
Correct.
And imported them into the supersedious consideration. Is that about right?
I don't know that that's what the court did. Testify that he did not own any vehicles, he did not have any business equipment related to the tree trimming business, he lost that business. He was unemployed at the time of the contempt trial and had no source of income. An abuse of discretion occurs when the trial court bases its decision upon reasons that are untenable or unreasonable. We believe that the amount of the supersedious bond set by the court was clearly untenable and acted to unfairly deprive the appellant of a substantial right, and that would be his right to appeal. I think that the reasoning behind the statute, I would hold that it should not be a barrier to having an appeal prosecuted. The next argument is that the district court erred in denying the plaintiff's motion to recuse. I'll just touch on this very briefly. It was brought to the court's attention that a bond payment had been made pursuant to the purge plan that was refused by the court. For some reason, they couldn't find an order related to that purge plan. And after that was brought to the court's attention, judge still issued a warrant for my client's arrest. If that's not evidence of bias and partiality, I don't know what is. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Peebles, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Chief Justice Evakin, to the other honorable judges. Privileged to be here today, and particularly on behalf of this client, Michelle McCullough, who I've now represented for a decade. The court went directly to some particular points, and so I will take that lead and deliver what I think to be a response. Willfulness, as was told by you, Your Honor, counsel, I believe, was overwhelmingly determined by Judge Bryan, and he recited particularly in the record and the Bill of Exceptions, at least as to that first proceeding, were provided to the court. He was absolutely confident that Mr. McCullough was a prevaricator, had not presented things accurately, did have the capacity to earn a living, but the fact that he now claimed to be a child care provider for his brother in Mississippi was a falsehood. Additionally, my client brought in a tree trimmer who had been a colleague at one point in time with Mr. McCullough, and his career administration, not only what his skills were, but what assets were and the tools of trade were that he had had and maintained post the entry of the divorce. We believe willfulness was found, and is, in the words of Mr. Gilner, as to some particulars, irrefutable. Secondly, as was asked by you, Justice Miller-Lerman, what did Mr. McCullough do to further his modification claims that he now says have put him in such a difficult position? Nothing. He was required by court order to get a psychological evaluation in 2014 by a professional that his own lawyer recommended. He never proceeded in that regard. Accordingly, there was no detail provided to Justice Bryan, or to me, or to Guardian of Life, actually on three occasions by request for extensions and different court orders and instructions. As to the bond issue, it's the opinion of the appellee that supersedious bond is not reviewable. Look at Green versus Morse, which we cited in our brief. We believe the supersedious stays the operation and does not in affect a substantial right. And secondly, if you move past that particular jurisdictional argument, we consider Judge Bryan's professionalism to be on target. And I would indicate in my brief, the brief on the case known as 161187 on November 30, 2016, and this is at page 8, Judge Bryan gave a well-reasoned accounting of his determination of the amount and how he calculated the particulars. He looked at 10 months for the period of time that the case would be on appeal and a $750 requirement on the property settlement agreement, payments that were due on the first contempt proceedings, and the usual and customary, or usual and ordered child support.
So my question was to opposing counsel that the rationale of coming up with the number is in the record.
Absolutely. Without question, it follows with detail the statute, which of course pronounces they're going to look at the judgment or 50% of the net worth of the appellant or $50 million. And without question, he did the switchback, because in the bottom of the first subpart of the statute, it's very clear that if you believe assets have been wasted or there's some usage that won't be honorable is the word I'm thinking of, then the court's going to look at the judgment. And it's very clear also in the law that under the Edwards case, as cited by my colleague, Mr. Gilner, there should be consideration of an amount that's going to afford protection to the appellee in full necessary amount.
Finally, does the record show that, I don't know how you show the absence of it, but there's no bond posted. Is everybody in agreement on that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Sorry. Good question. So we believe that the bond, if it's found to be reviewable, should be affirmed because Judge Bryan properly used the evidence presented in the
I might also I beg your pardon on the jurisdictional question. Is Green our youngest authority for
as far as I can find, Your
okay.
Honor.
For not being appealable. We have younger authority that a request to increase a bond is appealable.
Yes, ma'am, but the World Radio case delineated a set of facts that were exclusive to that case, in my opinion. Because World Radio, at the time, there had been an increase in the statutory interest rate, so the request to increase the bond made sense under that set of circumstances. We have no choice.
Thank you.
I had a good deal more to present, but under the circumstances and based on the questions presented to my colleague, David Alon, I'm not ready for this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have time for rebuttal?
1 minute
and 28 seconds, Mr. Gilner.
Very briefly, I would like to touch on the issue of superseding the bond again. I think Edwards versus Edwards makes it very clear that it is appealable. And it is, the standard of review is abuse of discretion. Also, Edwards versus Edwards holds the amount represented by 50% of the appellant's net worth, the maximum amount at which the bond may be set. As a result of the underlying decree of dissolution of marriage, this appellant has had his vehicles taken away from him, his house was taken away, his land was taken away, he lost his business and was forced to sell his business equipment. Visitation with his children has ended. Bogus charges of custodial interference have been drummed up. These were dismissed after a trial in the county court of Sarpy County. He was found in contempt while a modification action was on file. In August of 2016, another contempt was brought against Mr. McCullough for failure to pay child support by the state of Nebraska. Helen, had that case dismissed, that contempt section was dismissed by the district court referee because a modification was on file and had not been heard. The appellant deserves his day in court
What was the rationale of the referee?
There was a modification on file that had not been heard.
I see. Did the referee go to the confusion that the warrant was signed by a judge who'd been recused?
That's correct also.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned and you are excused.